Welcome back to Wine, Crime, and TV Time. I'm Kaylee.
And I'm Emily.
And we were slackers this week.
The worst slackers.
I feel like we need to get that out of the way.
I'm sorry.
So we didn't have an episode go up on Friday. And then we had intentions of like putting it up on Saturday. And then today. And then we were like, all right, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Let's just like take a break, get ourselves together, and come back for Monday.
Yes.
So this coming Friday, we're going to be doing the reunion special. We're going to do two parts on Friday for Teen Mom 2. So I guess we're skipping Young and Pregnant for 2 weeks.
Yeah, but...
Oh, well. So that's where we're at. It's been kind of a weird week. I feel like once Thanksgiving hits and then it's, like, the holiday season, it's just kind of, like... chaos. Yeah. So, what are you drinking today?
A good old bottle of water.
Me too. I got a nice big bottle of Poland Spring.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely drank too much last night.
Oops. That's because those wine glasses are so big.
I know, but they're so fun.
I think we need to fill them, like, this much.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I guess that we will just get into today's episode. Today we have another true crime episode for you guys. And this is the case of, I guess, the case of Michelle Carter, right? That's what we would call it.
Yeah.
And Conrad Roy.
This case has been bothering me for years.
Same. And it's definitely a little wild to me because I go a little back and forth with this one, to be honest.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
I do. I guess we will find out why, but I will tell you I disagree.
Mm-hmm. We'll obviously get there, but like, especially after watching, and I highly suggest watching the HBO documentary. It's a two-part documentary. The first part is the prosecution, and the second part is the defense. And after watching that, like, it kind of just, like, changed my mind a little bit. But I'm not sitting here saying that I, like, go back and forth thinking she's guilty or not guilty of, like, what she did. It's just reasonings behind it more so. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves, right?
Okay.
Sorry.
Relax.
We're just gonna jump in.
Okay.
So Conrad Henry Roy III was born on September 12th, 1995 in New Bedford, Massachusetts. He was described as a little socially awkward. He was quiet. He was anxious. And throughout high school, he was kind of known to be depressed, but he was an excellent baseball player. He ran track. He was on the crew team. He was super intelligent, and he graduated with a 3.88 GPA. And he was accepted into college. I think he even got a scholarship for baseball or something like that. But he decided not to go to college and joined his family business. His family kind of owned this, like, marine salvage business on the water. And he, like, grew up on the water. He loved it there. And he had gotten his captain's license, I think, before he even graduated high school, which, from what I understand, that's actually kind of hard, like,
getting
your captain's license. I don't really know much about it. I just, when I was watching the documentary, they had said that that's actually pretty difficult. So, he did love it there, but I imagine it kind of had to be a little bit difficult working with, like, just your family all the time.
Ugh.
And it was said that he was known to be pretty depressed, and I think that it kind of stemmed from his parents divorced. And I imagine that had to be, like, really hard for him because they divorced when he was in high school, which I think is a really tough time. I was so young, so I, like, don't know any other way. But I imagine when you, like, grow up living with your parents your whole life, and then all of a sudden you go through this divorce, and it's like, your life changes. And from what I understand, it was a messy divorce.
Yeah.
Like, it was
I couldn't imagine my parents getting divorced when I was in high school.
It'd be misery.
I was glad I was young enough that, like, it affected me, but not too much.
Yeah, like, I don't remember any other way.
Yeah.
I mean, you were older than me.
Yeah, I was in fourth grade.
Yeah, which is still a really hard time, but high school, it's like the worst.
Yeah.
Especially for boys, because they mature so much later, so they're like going through all their things then.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, so at this point in time, he started to claim that he was like losing his memory. He couldn't focus. He felt depressed. And his parents took him to doctors and psychiatrists, and they really struggled to like get him on the proper medication. And it seems like they did everything that they felt they possibly could. Like, they really put in the effort of like taking him to different doctors to try to figure out what was wrong.
Right.
And I actually was kind of surprised when I saw that, because I would like the fact that their divorce was so messy, I was surprised that they were like on the same page with that. You know, a lot of people, I feel like, especially if you have a boy who struggles with that, it's like, oh, get over it.
Yeah, for sure.
So I thought that that was awesome that they did that. But his family claimed that for a while they really felt like things were actually getting better after this, like after he started going to see therapists, and like his parents seemed to both be in a good place. They weren't like so from what I understand, his parents were actually really abusive. His mom and dad were very abusive towards each other, and his dad was pretty abusive towards him, mm-hmm. which is crazy, because watching the documentary, like, his dad just seems like such a like nice guy, but I mean, that doesn't mean anything, you know?
Did you catch the part like of Conrad's video? And he was like, I have a great, mother, and like, I guess a great dad too.
Yeah, for the most
part. He wants to be, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like,
Yeah, I saw that. But yeah, it seemed like he was like starting to get his life together, and he wasn't so depressed anymore. And in 2012, Conrad went down to his grandparents' house, and I assume that this was his mother's parents, down in Florida, for a visit with like the whole family. And his grandparents were living in like a retirement community, and they'd had friends in there who had a granddaughter around Conrad's age who was also down in Florida visiting her family at the time. So Conrad's aunt introduced the two, and that's how he met Michelle Carter.
Bet she regrets that now.
Yeah, right. I was thinking that when I was watching it.
Yeah, because that's like, the aunt that's in it, I'm assuming, right?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I was under the impression that it was.
Maybe. I couldn't tell if that was the mom's sister or the dad's sister.
Right.
I thought it was the dad's, to be honest.
Maybe.
But I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
So, Michelle Carter was born on August 11th, 1996. So, she was a little bit younger than him.
Mm-hmm.
And she was born in Plainville, Massachusetts. So, I find that kind of funny that they both met in Florida, but were from
Massachusetts.
Yeah. And I couldn't find out much about her childhood. She was described as athletic, a great student, polite, appealing, and very bubbly. She was known in her community as sweet, kind, and caring, and she won an award for most likely to brighten your day in high school. Michelle, however, also seemed to suffer with some depression, and she had an eating disorder. And from what I understand, her eating disorder began around the age of 8 or 9, and followed her all throughout high school. And I find this like super interesting, because I've always felt like Michelle and Skylar Richardson, there's something about them that I get confused and mixed up, because they're so similar to me.
And they're also like the same age, and yeah.
Like, and they have like the mm-hmm. same type of issues, honestly.
Yeah.
Not like exactly the same, but like they both had eating disorders. They both have clear like mental illness, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And especially the fact that they, like, developed those eating disorders so young. Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's really young.
Yeah, that is so young. I couldn't even imagine feeling that way about myself at such a young age.
No. But it seems like there was some self-harm going on, too. And I'm not sure exactly what age this was that when it started. But I guess she had been, like, cutting herself. And I don't know how long it lasted. I don't know when it started. But she wound up being put on some sort of like psychiatric medication from age 14, and was actively seeing a psychiatrist during this time to deal with like her depression and her disorders. And I imagine that she like had stopped cutting herself, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
When Michelle met Conrad in 2012 and had left Florida, even though they only lived an hour away from each other, they only like met up like 5 times in 2 years.
Oh, strange.
Isn't that really weird?
Yeah, because, I mean, Dennis and I lived over an hour from each other when we were even younger than that, and we weren't, like, only meeting up 5 times.
Yeah, and, like, they texted every day. Like, all day, every day. It's not like they, like, talked here and there or whatever. Like, they basically had a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just strange to me.
Yeah, that is really weird.
But they had started hanging out as, like, just friends, and eventually they began a relationship that was more like dating, but still, like, only through texts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this relationship wound up growing to be, like, extremely toxic for both of them. Because you have, like, these two kids who both struggle with depression and feelings of not being accepted and insecurities. And I think that it kind of started to become a little codependent on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they weren't, like, living this relationship, like, in real life. You know what I mean? Like, in person.
Yeah.
And it almost became, like, a fantasy for them. And I'm sure that they had felt that, like, you know, like, they related to each other. I think. But I also think that it probably got really, like, I don't know. I just think you put two depressed people together, you're going to, like, grow in your depressions together.
Yeah, and it seems like two depressed people that are not really, like, working on their depression.
Right, and, like, also very insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost seems like they, like, I'm going to read some text messages soon, but, like, it almost seems like they do a lot of things for attention's sake. And yeah. They're both like that, which isn't a good thing.
No.
But, yeah, eventually I just think that this would, like, lead to such a toxic relationship that the backbone of it stemmed from depression. Like, that's what kept them together.
Right.
So, Conrad had attempted suicide in the past. I think it was right before he had met Michelle. In 2012, he attempted suicide after his parents' divorce and after a fight between his parents had broken out. His mother, Lynn, had allegedly, like, physically attacked his dad. And police were called, and Lynn was tried, but she was never convicted. And it was also said that his father, like I said before, was physically abusive towards him. And his grandfather was verbally abusive, which...
The grandfather in the documentary?
Mm-hmm.
The singing grandfather?
Yeah, from what I gather.
Okay. Strange.
Because the other grandparents lived in Florida, so... You know?
Yeah. That's interesting, though.
Yeah. So when he had talked to Michelle about this incident, she had encouraged him, like, many times to seek professional help and that committing suicide wasn't the answer. At one point, he even, like, suggested that they would wind up like Romeo and Juliet, and she didn't want it to end like that for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in 2014, at the age of 17, Conrad was hospitalized for overdosing on acetaminophen, like Tylenol.
Oh, wow, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, so much Tylenol you'd have to take to be, like... overdosing.
Right. Yeah. And obviously it was like another suicide attempt. And like from what he was saying in his text messages, like the fatality like for Tylenol overdoses is like 0.2%. Like
so you know, kind of like for attention.
Right. But I mean he almost had to get a new liver because of this.
Oh wow.
So it did do some serious damage. It does. That's what I mean. Like, sometimes it seems a little attention-seeking, and I hate to say that, but that's what a lot of it seems to me.
Right.
So, Conrad had seen many different specialists at this time, and he'd been on the prescription drug Celexa for a month or so at this point. And Celexa, which is, like, the generic name is citalopram, is an SSRI, and it's used to treat, like, depression. And the warning on the box stated that Celexa may increase suicidal thinking and behavior in those under the age of 24. And I think that's kind of interesting because it claims that these side effects occur, like, when you're first taking the drug. Mm-hmm. And he had just begun that in June. And the events that we're going to be talking about are in July. So
right. He
had literally just started taking that drug. And based on listening to, like, even his, like, YouTube videos, you can tell he's depressed. And I'm going to play one real quick. Just so you can hear how he, like, thinks. It's, like, it's so bizarre to me.
It's sad.
It is sad.
Hi, This is Conrad Henry Roy III, reporting to you about what's going on through my mind, what's going on through my head the last few days. So it all started off just, I'm trying to do too much to better myself in so little time, like studying vocabulary words, trying to relate TV shows, movies, sports figures, cars, like, I don't know, Twitter phenomenon, like, real-life situation, not real-life situations, like, current event situation, like, current events, or what's going on in the media, because that's what people like to talk about. People generally like to talk about things that are going on.
So, I mean, just the way he talks about himself, it's, like, very sad.
Yeah, but it's weird because he says how he's feeling, but then he's also like, I have so much to offer.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just
I just
sad.
Think he's confused and he's a teenager and he just, like, it sucks because he was, like, provided tools to help better himself, but he just, like, didn't take advantage of the tools to better himself, you know?
Yeah.
So, on Sunday, July 13th, 2014, Conrad Roy was found inside of his truck at the Kmart parking lot in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, with a generator in his backseat, and it seemed like he'd committed suicide by poisoning himself with carbon monoxide. And it all seemed like it was a suicide until law enforcement started to look through Conrad's phone that was in there, and they had seen thousands of text messages between Conrad and Michelle that seemed as though she was, like, kind of behind Conrad's final decision. And I want to read some of Michelle's texts between her and Conrad, like, that happened that day, because I think that the texts make up, like, literally 3/4 of this case. Like,
yeah, for sure.
So it seems like for at least a couple of days, if not weeks, like, she would text him and be like, let me know when you're going to do it. Like, you told me you're going to do it. Why haven't you done it? Blah, 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 blah. So I'm kind of just going to start with the first thing that kind of sticks out to me is he texts Michelle. So Conrad texts Michelle on that morning on July 12th at 4:30 in the morning.
Crazy.
It's so early. And it says, waiting for, but I have everything lined up. I really don't know what I'm very confused about that text, but pretty much saying he's, like, ready to do it, but, like, doesn't know what he's going to do. And she responds back saying, no, you're not, Conrad. Last night was it. You keep pushing it off and you say you'll do it, but you never do. It's always going to be that way if you don't take action. Ugh. You're just making it harder on yourself by pushing it off. You have to just do it. Do you want to do it now? And then he says, is it too late? I don't know. It's already light outside. I'm going to go back to sleep. Love you. I'll text you tomorrow. She says, no. It's probably the best time now because everyone's sleeping. Just go somewhere in your truck and no one's really out right now because it's an awkward time. If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And you can say you'll do it tomorrow, but you probably won't. And then she said tonight with an asterisk. And then she says, love you. He says, thank you with a smiley face. She says, for what? Are you awake? He says, yes. She says, are you going to do it today?
Oh, my yes.
God. Oh, the are you awake was at 9 o'clock in the morning, by the way. Mm. Are you going to do it today? Yes, with, like, multiple S's.
Yes.
She says, like, in the daytime? Should I? Yeah, it's less suspicious. You won't think about it as much, and you'll get away with, and you'll get it over with instead of waiting until the night. He says, yeah, then I will. Like, where? Like, I could go in any enclosed area. She said, go in your truck and drive to a parking lot somewhere, to a park or something. Do it now, like, early. He says, didn't we say this was suspicious? She says, no, I think night is more suspicious. A kid sitting in his car, just turn on the radio and do it. It won't be suspicious, and it won't take long. All right, I'm taking Holly for a walk. Okay. I don't know why I'm like this, he says. She says, sometimes things happen and we never have the answers why. Like, why am I so hesitant lately? Like, 2 weeks ago, I was willing to try everything, and now I'm worse, really bad. And I'm not falling through. It's eating me inside. She said, you're so hesitant because you keep overthinking it and pushing it off. You need to just do it, Conrad. The more you push it off, the more it will eat at you. You're ready and prepared. All you have to do is turn the generator on and you'll be free and happy. No more pushing it off. No more waiting. He says, you're right. She says, if you want it as bad as you say you do, it's time to do it today. No more waiting. Oh, no. He says, no more waiting. She says, okay, I'm serious. Like, you can't even wait till tonight. You have to do it when you get back from your walk. He says, thank you. She says, for what? And he says, still being here. She says, I would never leave you. You're the love of my life, my boyfriend. You're my heart. I'd never leave you. He says, aw. She says, love you. He says, love you too. When will you be back for your walk? Blah, blah, blah. She's claiming she just wants to be ready and sure or something when he's going to kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
So then he texts her again, and this must be after his walk, and he says, I'm freaking out again. I'm overthinking. She says, I thought you wanted to do this. The time is right, and you're ready. You just need to do it. You can't keep living this way. You just need to do it like you did last time and not think about it. Just do it, babe. You can't keep doing this every day. He said, I do want to, but I'm, like, freaking out for my family, I guess. I don't know. She said, Conrad, I told you I'll take care of them. Everyone will take care of them to make sure they won't be alone, and people will help them get through it. We talked about this. They will be okay and accept it. People who commit suicide don't think this much, and they just do it. He said, I know, LOL. Thinking just drives me more crazy. She said, exactly. You just need to do it, Conrad, or I'm going to get you help. They kind of go back and forth a little bit. He talks about going to the beach. She said, go to the beach.
Yeah.
And she just kind of keeps saying, like, when are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? Have you done it yet? So, I guess he must leave and go to do this, because he says, leaving now, and that's at 6:20. Mm-hmm. She says, okay, you can do this. He says, okay, I'm almost there. She says, okay. He says, please answer me. I'm scared. Are you okay? I love you. Please answer. So, she winds up, she's texting him, I guess up until the point of everything, saying that she's scared and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
She claims she's going to wait until he turns on the generator. And there's also a phone call in between all of this. There's two phone calls.
Right.
And that's after he gets there, because there's a text that says, I'm almost there. And at 9:19, she texts him, please answer me. She texts him again and says, I'm scared. Are you okay? I love you. Please answer. She texts him again at 10:30 and says, you're at your dad's. Camden told me. I'll get you help soon, I guess. And then she kind of goes on and texts him after that. She's like, I thought you actually did it. I'm going to tell your mom that you need to get help. I can't stand to see you this way anymore, and you can't live like this. You need to get help whether you want to or not. She says, did you do something? Conrad, I love you so much. Please tell me this is a joke. I'm so sorry. I didn't think you were being serious, Conrad. Please don't leave us like this. I let you down. I'm so sorry. I should have saved you. I need you. Please answer me. I'm going to go get you help. You're going to get better. We're going to make it through this. I love you so much. yeah, she kind of goes on, and then she winds up, like, she must realize that he's dead, and she says, "Sweet dreams, babe, I know you're up there smiling down on me. I'll always smile back. I love you forever." So.
I hate her.
Yeah. Definitely, like, weird, right? Like,
yeah, I don't understand.
Because even though, like, what she's saying is, like, so messed up, don't get me wrong, she also seems, like, confused about why she's saying it.
Do you think so? Really?
I do. I feel like she's so, like, there's clearly something in her that thinks she's doing the right thing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I guess.
Like, what I'm saying is, she isn't thinking that she thinks she's helping him or doing what he wants or something. You know what I mean? Like, she's not saying, like, kill yourself. You deserve to die. She's like, you're going to be happier. Like, you're going to be in a better place. Like, she somehow thinks in her head that this is the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's weird to me.
Yeah.
The whole thing is weird, but
I don't know. I just don't understand how you could just be like, are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? And then be like, oh, I didn't know you were serious. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. That, like, text, I'm like, no, you knew he was serious.
Yeah. I would never be able to encourage that.
But I think about people that age that are, like, in weird relationships. And I know that this is so extreme, this one. But, like, some people will say anything to appease their partner or to, like, go along with what they want. And I don't know. It's just, it's weird, but I don't know. But anyway, after these text messages at 6:28 p.m., there was a 42-minute phone call from Michelle to Conrad. So he had sent the text that he was there, and then I guess she must have called him. Mm-hmm. And then at 7:12, there was another call from Conrad to Michelle, and that was for 47 minutes. And that was the last conversation that he ever would have. So after this, detectives go to Michelle's school and they pull her out for, like, an interview, kind of. And they pretty much tell her that they're taking her phone into evidence. And I couldn't find the audio of the interview, but it's in the HBO episode. And what's weird about it is, like, again, she doesn't think that she's done anything wrong. Like, it's just weird. If you listen to her voice, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, yeah, like, I knew he was depressed and blah, 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 blah. And I knew he wanted to kill himself. And, you know, and they're like, okay, can we take a look at your phone? She's like, okay. Like, not concerned.
So strange.
So strange. But yeah, eventually, after this, she would be charged with involuntary manslaughter, which I didn't really understand what that meant, mm-hmm. but by definition, it is an unintentional killing that results either from a criminal negligence or the commission of a low-level criminal act, such as a misdemeanor. Wow. Involuntary manslaughter is distinguished from other forms of homicide because it does not require deliberation or premeditation or intent.
Okay.
So I guess it's almost like secondary. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she didn't actually, I guess that makes sense, but.
Yeah.
On February 4th, 2015, Michelle was indicted on these charges because a jury found that there was enough evidence to charge her in assisting the suicide and that she was mentally capable of being tried as an adult. Michelle's lawyers appealed this decision because in Massachusetts, there's no law against the action that Michelle had done. Like, there's actually no law in, like, aiding and abetting in a suicide, I guess, in Massachusetts. And they had said, they were like, call this whatever you want, immoral, irresponsible, or even cold. But what she did not break any laws. And obviously, this appeal was denied. The judge was like, yeah, no.
Right.
But she did decide to waive her right to a jury trial, and the case was heard by a judge. And we actually saw this in the last episode that we did with Russ Faria.
Mm-hmm.
How he, like, waived his right to a jury and just had the judge decide his fate. Mm-hmm. And one of the lawyers that was involved was actually saying that it's, like, a genius defense strategy because a jury doesn't necessarily know the law, but they know their emotions, whereas, like, a judge knows the law, you know what I mean? So right. You're more likely. I think that if I were sitting on a jury for this, my emotions would take control over, like, the law, I guess, you know?
Right, yeah.
So Michelle's trial was pretty short. It only lasted a little over a week. Wow. The prosecution started out by stating how Michelle had no real friends and was using Conrad's suicide to gain sympathy for herself, as well as make people want to be friends with her. And they brought witnesses up, like her old friends who had testified against her. And they claimed that they were being friendly with Michelle in school, but they never hung out outside of school, like, at all. And they couldn't, like, find one person that was, like, a really good friend of hers that she, like, hung out with ever.
Okay.
Yeah, and they all agreed, like, when asked by the prosecution to the fact that Michelle was, like, incessant and would text them constantly and wanted to hang out or feeling sorry for herself, that they really weren't close with her. They just, like, kind of felt bad for her. And they bring up a conversation with Sam Boardman where just 2 days before Conrad's death, Michelle almost, like, tries out her story to see how it would go. And I'm going to read that the text there, which is so weird to me.
Yeah.
She also texted this Sam girl, like, all the time and told her all of her personal shit. Like,
so strange.
There were a lot of texts between her and Sam, mostly her to Sam. So on July 10th at 3:01 p.m., which this is 2 days before Conrad would kill himself, she texts her friend Sam and says he's missing, like they don't know where he is. Now, mind you, she's actually texting Conrad at the same time as this, that this is all happening. And Sam says, Conrad, like asking a question. And she says, yeah. She's like, how did you find that out? She said, I texted his mom because I was getting really worried. Like, he always texts me in the morning and he didn't. And he stopped answering last night. So I asked her if he was okay. And she said they've been looking for him the past few hours and they can't find him. And Sam says, does he have his car? Don't worry too much about it yet. Worrying won't get anywhere. For all you know, he could have gone out and his phone died. It's okay. He will be okay. She said, yeah, I think so. I mean, last night he called me in his truck and he was getting something at the store. But yeah, you're right. I just don't get why he wouldn't be home by now. His mom and sister are giving me updates. Sam says, he probably would have told you if he wasn't planning on coming back, you know? Don't worry yet. She's like, yeah, that's true. He would have. And okay, I'm going to try to stay calm. And then she says, is there any way a portable generator can kill you somehow? Because he said he was going to get that and some other tools at the store. He said he needed to replace the generator at work to fix stuff. I don't really think anything of it. But he didn't go to work today, so I don't know why he would have got that stuff. And then I guess, like, Sam didn't answer her, and she said, still nothing, they haven't found him. And then she texted her again, it's all my fault. Sam says, did they call the police? She says, well, I talked to his mom at, like, 9, and she said they're still looking. But I think they are soon, because it's been 24 hours, and that's when you can report a person missing. And his mom said she was going to call me if she finds him, and she hasn't yet. And then that's where, like, the conversation ends. And then Sam texts her back, like, later and says, hey, did they find him yet? And pretty much she keeps saying that they didn't, asks if the police are involved. Like, she goes on this whole spiel. But also, I just want to say, you do not have to wait any amount of time to file a missing persons report.
I thought it was 24 hours.
Nope. There's no law anywhere that you have to wait any amount of time to file a missing persons report. They will encourage you over and over and over. Like, if you say I went missing and it's been 3 hours and you're concerned, you can go down to the police station, file a missing persons report. They're going to do everything in their power to say, oh, it's too soon, blah, 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 blah. But they can't stop you from filing a missing persons report.
Oh, wow.
So that is not true. But a lot of people think that.
Yeah, I definitely thought that.
But, yeah, not the case. But, yeah, so she's basically, like, trying out her, like,
story.
M.O.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, meanwhile, like I said, she was texting him at the same exact time. So he wasn't missing.
No.
So they also bring up Conrad's friend, Tom. And he talks about his text with Michelle over this Homers for Conrad event that she created in his honor, which was so weird. So she creates this event, and she, like, makes flyers and makes posts everywhere, and I guess it was some sort of a baseball event that was going to be in her town, and the money raised was going to go towards, like, funeral expenses and stuff like that, and it was, like, to show support for Conrad. But it was going to be in her town. And everybody was like, why? It's an hour away from his home and his friends and his family. Like,
right.
Why would we do that? There's so,
that doesn't Tom, make sense.
What?
That doesn't make sense at all.
Isn't that really weird?
Yeah.
Tom texts Michelle, and he's like, first he asks her, just curious, how long did you and Conrad date for? I mean, that's not how their conversation started, but he does ask that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, we were dating on and off for 3 years, haha, but he asked me out again on June 11th, so we were dating for like a month this time around. He says, had no idea. She says, haha, I'm not surprised, I don't think he told anyone. Like, weird.
So weird.
So then he says, why is it in Plainville? She said, it's my town, haha. But everyone that knows Conrad is from the Mattapoisett area. Yeah, I know, but I didn't know how to organize it in a town I didn't know anyone in, and it was a long drive to keep going back and forth. I'm sure I... What?
That's so weird.
Isn't that really weird?
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'm sure I could have made some calls. Makes more sense to have it in Mattapoisett. She said, yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to have it there, but I don't know anyone here, and I know how I can advertise it and everything here. I know people will come here anyways from your town, though. He says, I understand, but you're the only person from Plainville that he knew. Feel like it would be so much easier for his family and friends to have it closer to home. She said, I know what you're saying, and I agree. I'm sorry, but I really don't think I would have been able to do it there because it would have been really hard for me to organize, you know? He said, I can organize it, dot, 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 dot.
That would be something that I would say, too. Same.
And she's like, well, I'm the one. Well, the one I'm doing is going to be here because I already have it all set up, haha. But you can do another one there another time, like a week after or something. He said, I'm going to contact the Mattapoisett Little League because it's going to be way easier for all of Conrad's family and friends to attend it in his hometown. I know this is what he'd want. He would love to have you attend as well. If you could change your event's location, that would be great. She says, Tom, I can't change it. Like, I already have made it here. I already have it made here, and I have people advertising it here and supporting it and everything. I'm sorry, but it has to be here. Like, I'm sure everyone will come from your town. It's only 40 minutes away, and it's a fundraiser for him. So I know people will come. Like, this was my idea. I created it to be here. Ha ha.
Oh, he says,
I love this part. I understand. Just curious, how many times did you meet him in person? She says, why are you asking me all these questions? He says, just curious, because we were so close, but he never mentioned you. Not trying to sound messed up or anything.
I find that so strange also, though.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, especially because, like, they were going back and forth saying how much they loved each other, blah, blah, blah. And, like, it's fine. Like, you don't need to meet in person, but, like, why would you not speak to your best friend about someone that you loved?
Right. That's why I feel like it was just, like, a big fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was more, she was more into him than he was into her.
Okay, yeah, I see that.
And there were even, like, texts that were, like, he was mean to her a lot.
Yeah.
But I think that she just, and I'm going to really get into that later. There's, like, a part that gets, like, really, really weird. But
mm-hmm.
I think she just lived in a total non-reality. And I don't know if it was easier for him to say, like, love you. I don't know if it was just somebody who eased his depression and made it feel better because she was also depressed.
Uh-huh.
And his friends maybe weren't.
It made him feel, like, better about his condition.
Yeah, like, you know when there's, like, people out there that, like, thrive off of other people's misery?
Yeah.
Like, it makes them feel better that somebody else feels bad?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of a thing?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the majority of the text between them. Here you can kind of get like an idea of how Michelle is using like the whole thing as a sympathy for herself. Like, oh, it's in my town. And if you look at pictures, it's like her being the center of attention and like
right,
all about her.
She's something.
Yeah. So they also bring up Conrad's sister, Camden, who was his sister. I think she was like 2 years younger than her. She was down in Florida with them when they met. And she testifies. And they kind of talk briefly about like their text messages. And it's pretty much like Michelle asking if they know where. First of all, she introduces herself to Camden. She's like, hey, Camden, it's Michelle Carter. I don't know if you remember me, but I'm dating your brother again. Ha ha. And Camden's literally like, how'd you get my number?
Yeah.
But Michelle's like asking if her mom knows where Conrad is. And at this point, Camden and his mom think that he's alive. So they claim that he's at his dad's house and this and the other thing. And she's like, I'll let you know when I hear from him. And Michelle just like texts her like rapid fire, like, hey, did you hear anything? Is your mom mad at me? Like, blah, blah, blah. And it's just so weird. She's like, no, we just don't know where Conrad is. And she's like, I'm going to come help you look. I'm just waiting for my mom to come. Find him yet? And they're like, no. And she's like, just stay positive. Let me know. Like, she's getting very much so like one word answers. And she like literally keeps asking, have you found him yet? When's the last time he talked to you guys? What time last night? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just crazy person. What?
Like a crazy person.
Yeah, it's almost like she's trying to look more innocent or something, you know? Like, by not knowing.
Yeah. She's trying to make herself look a lot better.
And she's, like, asking them, she's like, I'm gonna come help. What's your address again? Like, that's just crazy to me that you don't know your boyfriend's address.
Also, why didn't you go see him and you're gonna go help them now, but you only saw him, what, a handful of times in 3 years or whatever the fuck?
Right.
That's so
and
strange.
She's just like, did you call the police yet? Blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, it's a lot. She's very, like, intrusive. And then eventually, like, once, like, they realize that he's gone, she's yeah. like, hey, love, please talk to me if you need to. I want to do everything I can to help you and your family through. She's like, I guess Camden replies, I'm not sure what we're doing tomorrow, but I'll ask. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
And then she says back to her, I wasn't bullying, and it's making me mad that everyone thinks it was. I will tell type out. I don't even know what she's saying. But, yeah, she just, like, keeps saying, like, how are you? Sending my love. Like, when's the services? Is it going to be a closed casket? I look forward to seeing you guys. Are you going to say anything at the funeral? Like, she's just so weird.
Yeah, so weird.
Yeah, like, everything she did, it's, like, very much, it reminds me of Jody, too, like, just the manipulation to try to get everything, like, I don't know,
cover yeah. herself. Yeah.
You know? So, the defense opens up, and they start talking about the abuse of Conrad from his father on February 20th, 2014, and they bring up an officer who arrived at the scene of the assault call. So, pretty much right now, what they're doing is kind of, like, trying to pretty much prove that there were other things that caused his depression and him to commit suicide.
Right, not just her pressuring him to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Conrad had filled out a statement claiming that he told his dad, and this is what the whole assault came from, and if you look at pictures of this assault, actually, like, it was hit pretty bad in the face. Mm-hmm. But he had filled out a statement claiming that he told his dad he would put a pan of mac and cheese away during a commercial break of the basketball game they were watching, and his dad said, do it now, and I guess that's, like, what ensued the abuse, and his dad's girlfriend called him a piece of shit, like, leading up to the assault or something.
Yeah.
But his dad actually talks about this, like, in the documentary, too, and he kind of just says, like, yeah, we fought each other, things got out of control, but I wouldn't change the way it happened. And he's like, I know what happened. Like, I was being a father, and my dad always told me, if you ever come swinging at me, I'm going to lay you out. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like, he's not here to tell his, like, whole side.
Right.
But who knows if he threw a punch, then he threw a punch. I'm not saying that that's okay, but that was the way that the dad kind of played it off.
Okay.
And I don't really know that I necessarily agree with his dad at all, because they also speak of other times that Conrad was assaulted by his father. And I think that there was abuse there. I mean, we saw that his mom attacked his dad, and I think it was just like an abusive household, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And they talk about him being diagnosed with a concussion after one incident, and his dad was arrested. But yeah, actually, I have written down, I was like, to be honest, the dad sounds like, seems like a sweet guy. But after I hear all this, it really taints my view on his dad. So,
right.
Like I said, we don't know.
Yeah.
So the defense brings up Dr. Peter Bregan to the stand. And I believe he was like their main witness. And I think he's like an expert psychiatrist or something like that. He testifies that Conrad's prescription of Celexa was definitely a contributing factor of his suicide, but it was not the primary factor. But he said, you know, that is a side effect. However, could I sit here and say that he killed himself because he was on Celexa? No. But he talks about the angry and violent divorce between his parents, and they also bring up the text messages between Lynn Roy and Michelle Carter again, and they talk about how she wishes that she could have gotten Conrad away from his dad's side of the family. Like, there was this, like, I don't think it was a whole thread. It was just his mom said to Michelle that she wishes, she's like, his dad's side of the family has blood on their hands. I really wish that I could have gotten him away from them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I wish I could have gotten him out of that, like, hostile environment, and maybe he wouldn't be so depressed. He also speaks about how Michelle was also on SSRIs, specifically Prozac, which he claims that she shouldn't have ever been given due to the fact that she was bulimic, and this would increase the symptoms of bulimia for her. And I don't know how much you know about Prozac, but I have a friend who was prescribed Prozac for anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember them telling me that, like, one of the main side effects of it is weight gain. So mm-hmm. I can see why the doctor would question that.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would you, there's so many different SSRIs and antipsychotics and stuff like that out there. Why would you prescribe her one that's going to give her weight gain, that's going to cause more anxiety or more depression over the weight gain?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad call.
Yeah, super weird. But I guess it also can encourage suicidal thoughts and tendencies. And within months of taking Prozac, Michelle had attempted to hang herself, and she told her friend Sam Boardman, like, she literally tells this girl everything. Jeez. And this girl just seems like she's being nice, like, no, you're beautiful, like, you're a good person, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, she pretty much just tells her, she's like, I even looked up how to tie the stupid knot, Sam, like, it just, everything about the way that these two are and reading their texts and seeing all this, everything seems so, like, attention-seeking.
Yeah.
And I never want to say that about suicides, because, like, I don't want to take away, like, whatever somebody's feeling, but it's just the way that it seemed.
I feel like if I were to have those thoughts, I wouldn't be, like, texting everyone and being, like, hey,
you wouldn't text an acquaintance. And honestly, yeah. The thing is like, most people who, like, do commit suicide, like,
they don't talk
about
it. You
don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, who knows? I guess everybody, like, deals differently. It's just the way that the two of them talk is very much so like, oh, I don't know if I want to do it. Like, I'm just trying, like, it's like they're trying to have casual conversation about this. It's weird.
Yeah.
So during this point is when Conrad was admitted into the hospital for attempting to overdose, like, during the time when Michelle had attempted to hang herself with the Tylenol. And he had texted her and was like, she texted him something like, hey, after, like, a day or two of not talking, he's like, do you even care what's been going on with me? And she's like, oh, what happened? And he's like, I almost died last night, or I'm in the hospital. I almost died last night. And she's like, oh, like for therapy? Or maybe he didn't say died. But she's like, oh, for therapy? And that's when he says, I almost died last night. And she's like, oh my God, what happened? And he tells her, and he's like, yeah, if my mom didn't rush me here, like I'd be gone. But in the same breath, then he says the fatality like number for Tylenol overdose is 0.2%. So, but she's just like, oh my God, like, don't do this. You, like, you have a good life. I love you. Please don't kill yourself. That's not the other thing. So what's weird is, like, for so long, she really is, like, trying to get him not to. And something happened. You know what I mean?
Maybe she just kind of got fed up with it.
Right. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, or he kept saying it over and over. So she's just like, okay, I'm not even going to sit here and like beg him. I'm just going to like be like, okay, just
fucking
whatever.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Conrad had attempted suicide at least 4 times. And, but this is like I was saying before, how his mom claimed that he needed a liver transplant from that one. But 4 times, that's a lot. So Dr. Bregan states that due to Michelle being on Prozac and her mind being easily manipulated and depressed, she would take on, like, all of Conrad's thoughts and his dark thoughts. And he says she basically, like, follows his lead down, like, this dark path of what he was going down, just going along with what he wanted. Like, he at one point was like, and there's so many text messages, like, so many. But at one point he's like, I've seen the devil before. And she's like, really? Like, what did he say or something? And he responds back, and then she's like, I've seen the devil too. It's like, she just, like, wants to appease him so much. And on June 29th, 2014, this is where that Romeo and Juliet whole thing comes in. And Conrad tells Michelle, this is on, like I said, this is June 29th, and he dies on July 13th.
Right.
So he tells Michelle there is nothing that's going to make him want to live anymore. There's nothing she can say. There's nothing he can do. And he wants to die. And this is where he brings up the Romeo and Juliet text. And he's like, oh, we should be like Romeo and Juliet. And she's like, I'd love to be your Juliet. And then he's like, do you know what happens in the end, though? And she's like, oh, hell, like in all caps. She was like, oh, hell no, we are not dying. And he also, in this whole, that whole portion, threatens her that if she tells anybody that he's suicidal, that he'll hate her. So a little piece of me feels bad for her here, because I think that she's in a very toxic, somewhat abusive relationship. And through some of these texts, I really see him like manipulating her into what he wants and into her just going along with what he wants and saying what he wants. And that's kind of, I think, where I come from when I say I get a little confused on this case, because I'm like, was this all just because she wanted to give him what he wanted? Like, and she didn't think it was going to happen, and she was just going along and having the conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember being a young girl. I mean, she also obviously is, like, mentally very, very unstable. I was not mentally unstable, but I remember having boyfriends and just saying things and doing things because that's what they wanted.
Yeah, me too. But I think that there comes a point where you have to, like, draw the line. And
sure.
If a boyfriend or whatever came to me and, like, was saying this stuff to me, I wouldn't be like, yeah.
Well, same.
Like.
Same.
I get what you're saying,
yeah.
though.
Like, I relate to her, except for the psychotic part. Like, she's clearly psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. There's something. There's obviously a chemical imbalance. I mean, it's clear, because from age 8 on, there has been an imbalance. And I can't even find where it stems from or what the issue is. Her parents seem pretty normal.
Yeah.
Dr. Bregan kind of starts to talk about involuntary intoxication and how it involves impulsivity and, like, impaired judgment. And he believes that Michelle Carter was involuntarily intoxicated during this time period. He says she was taking Prozac and then she was switched to Celexa, like, pretty, like, within that time. I think she was switched to Celexa within the month of June. And that was the same drug that Conrad was on.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Bregan testifies that he believes that the switch to her, like, involuntary intoxication was July 2nd, when she gives up trying to keep, like, helping Conrad, like, trying to convince him. Because up until July 2nd, She is like, no, you're not going to die. Like, this isn't happening. No, like, we're going to get you help, blah, blah, blah. And July 2nd, something flips. And she's, like, trying to help him go to heaven, per se. So the doctor kind of claims that that was the turning point. And mind you, that's only 10 days.
That's such a short amount of time.
Right? Like, maybe it is a psychotic episode. I don't know. But that is a really short amount of time to be one way and have one opinion. And then all of a sudden, you're like,
duh, that flipped. Yeah.
And your medication has changed.
Right.
So it's a little weird. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Bregan also claims that since she's in a hypomanic state, she gets like very angry when disrupted. Like, so when he's not doing what he says he's going to do, and she's like, when are you going to do it? Why haven't you done it? Why, like, this and the other thing? Like, that's why she, like, demands answers from him. Again, this is what the doctor, that doctor that's testifying for the defense is saying. Mm-hmm. He's saying, like, that's very normal for, like, somebody to be in a manic state like that, mm-hmm. to act that way. So then the prosecutor comes up and they cross-examine Dr. Bregan. And she brings up how Michelle was going to camp and seeing a therapist, and everything seemed normal. She seemed to be okay. She was hanging out with friends. She was laughing. She was taking pictures. Like, totally normal in this period of time. And I want to say, like, that was around June 2nd or something like that. Mm-hmm. She states that she seemingly knew right from wrong. And Dr. Bregan says that she actually believed that she was doing the right thing on July 12th. Like, that's what he, like, kind of said to her was, like... Because she's saying, like, you know, you can't say that she doesn't know right from wrong, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I think that she thought what she was doing was right. Yeah. And he talks about her being a psychopath. And they bring up, this is when the prosecutor brings up the 2 days prior of her claiming she was, that, like, Conrad was missing. And she's talking to... him while she's telling her friend that she's missing. And he does say, he's like, she's literally psychotic. She's irrational. And what she did, like, she clearly was not in the right state of mind. And that's what I'm here to testify today.
Yeah.
And he claims that everything she has stated is exactly why he came to the conclusion that she is psychotic. And it makes no sense. But Michelle never takes the stand. And at this point, the prosecution gives their closing statement, bringing up the text to Sam Boardman again, the one where she, I don't think I talked about this, but she had said to Sam that she's like, I think he did it with the generator. He got out of the car and called me and told me he was scared. And I told him to fucking get back in, Sam. This is my fault. So they bring up that text where she's like accepting responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense gives their closing statement claiming that it was suicide and he made his decision pretty much. So I also want to bring this up because this was a part of the HBO documentary that I thought was really interesting and I didn't know where to put it, but I just popped it in here. And it's so weird to me. But a journalist who was looking into this whole case found that so many of their conversations almost came from like, literally direct lines out of movies and shows and whatnot. And like I was saying before, how she's like living in a fantasy world. And he noticed most of these phrases and stuff were pulled from Glee specifically. And I know, isn't this weird?
Yeah.
So Michelle was obsessed with Lea Michele. Like if you went on her Facebook, you would see like Women Crush Wednesday, like Lea Michele. And like, she's like, my hero, blah, 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 blah. Like, loved Lea Michele. She would literally take exact words from Glee and send them to Conrad. Like, it would be like, it was like, you're my first, my last, my everything. It's always been you. And she would send to him, it's always been you. You're my first, my last, my everything. Like, just weird. So then Corey Monteith dies, who was on Glee and was also Lea Michele's boyfriend. And this is a year almost to the date that Conrad dies.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. So she starts to kind of like relate to her and Conrad's relationship to what happened in Glee to Lea Michele.
So dumb.
Yeah. And she kind of, like, saw that happening to her, I guess. And it sounds really weird, but she even uses, like, exact interviews that Lea Michele gave after Cory Monteith's death. And she'll use, like, those words when talking about, like, Conrad's death to her friends. So, like, there was an interview that Lea Michele gave where she's like, you know, I woke up every day feeling like the luckiest girl alive, and he was my person. And literally, there is a text that she sent to Sam that said, he was just my person, you know, like, I woke up every day feeling like the luckiest girl alive. Okay, and it's just so weird. So another, like, kind of creepy part of this is Michele starts to talk to her friends about being bi and being in love with a friend named Alice right before Conrad had came into her life. And then when Conrad had got more and more, like, suicidal and depressed, Michele starts to claim to her friends that she can't stop thinking about Alice and the relationship they had and how she loves her and wants to be with her. But when this journalist who was, like, doing this whole story reached out to Alice and her family, Alice claims that there was never any relationship with Michele, and Michele is literally a sociopath. Like, so it was just, like, all made up. And he also talks about how 5 days before Conrad died, Michele went to go see The Fault in Our Stars. And I've never seen this, but I guess the storyline is there's a guy that's dying in his Jeep. Mm-hmm. Or something, and he calls his girlfriend, and she calls the police and drives over there, and he's saved, and blah, 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 blah. And he just talks about how, like, eerie it is, and how it just seems like she's living in this fantasy world and never really saw reality and was just, like, basing it off of, like, he was like, I don't know if she, a piece of her was going to go save him, or, you know, like, but there's something weird about the fact that this guy's dying in his car and asks for help, and it's, like, the same thing.
Mm-hmm. More or less, yeah.
So strange, but that's not really part of, like, the case, necessarily. I just thought that that was, like, a weird tidbit.
Yeah.
So on February 6, 2019, Michele Carter was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter and acted with criminal intent in aiding in Conrad Roy's suicide. She was sentenced to 15 months in prison. And from what I understand, her sentence actually got knocked down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think she's still in prison. She's also cut, like, all of her hair off and looks totally different.
I did see that also.
And walks like a boy.
So strange.
Yeah. So maybe she's found herself in there.
So why do you think that you kind of go back and forth because of her mental illness and you feel mm-hmm. bad about that? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I go back and forth because I think I'm not sitting here saying I, like, go back and forth because I don't think she did something wrong. Mm-hmm. I personally go back and forth because I don't know if she realized what she did was so wrong at the time. And I think that she was so ill, and I think she was really manipulated by him, and maybe vice versa to an extent. I don't know that I think he was manipulated by her other than that whole exchange of get in the car, like, do it today, do it tonight, do it now, you're never going to do it. It's the only manipulation I see there, but I think she was manipulated, and I think she lived in a world that she wanted something that wasn't really there. That's why I go back and forth.
Yeah, that makes sense. I still, as much as I feel like I do feel bad for both parties, I still think that what she did is just, I don't know, the worst.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Because I don't.
I definitely agree. I just, my mind sometimes is just all over the place with this. That's why this one keeps me up at night, is because I go so all over. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, maybe she was just sick of hearing him say this over and over and just, like, didn't have an answer anymore.
I still just feel like even if someone was, like, bothering me and, like, I didn't want to hear it, I wouldn't be like, okay, then fucking do it, you know?
Right. Like, I would definitely try to, I mean, I like to think that I would try to get somebody help, but I think she was also afraid of him hating her for some reason.
Because he, like, threatened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just weird. But I also think that she's a compulsive liar. And I think she'll say anything she can to get attention.
Yeah.
And there was this other thing that was weird that she, like, told all of her friends that she'd had sex. And then they asked her about it. And she was like, her one friend was like, they were talking about sex or something. And her friend's like, oh, well, haven't you had sex? And she's like, no. Why? Did I tell you that I did? Like, she doesn't even know what, like, lies she's telling. Mm-hmm. And then she says that she went to third base. Then she says she was raped by Conrad. And her friends don't believe her that she was raped.
I mean, I don't think
But isn't that, like, her. No, same. But, like, the fact that your friends don't believe you, like, because you're a compulsive liar.
Yeah.
And you want attention.
Yeah.
And that's what this all came down to be honest, I think, is attention.
From both parts, I think.
Yeah, I really think so. And it was just, unfortunately, it was tragic, and it wound up the way that it did.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I feel like if he gave it a few years, it might have gotten better.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially because he would be, like, in his 20s now.
I also think if he never got involved with her, that he wouldn't be where he is.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, I could be totally wrong because he was, like, attempting it, but if it were a different girl who wasn't so mentally ill.
I think that he was attempting it with things that he knew wouldn't actually kill him. Things that would, like, for the Tylenol, he knew that wasn't going to kill him.
And that's also why I go back and forth, because it wasn't just her telling him to kill himself. Like, there were other things that played a factor in this, for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, there were definitely other parts of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do believe that she deserves to have prison time. Like, I'm not saying I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I think that she actually got off way too light, to be honest.
She did. She did.
I think that she deserved maybe 5 years.
Okay.
I think that that would have been, like, a fair punishment. But 15 months? Come on.
Yeah, it's, like, nothing. So. And even shorter now.
Yeah, she's going to be out soon. Mm-hmm. Because she was sentenced in, what, February?
Mm-hmm.
So. She'll probably be out by February, honestly.
I wonder what she's going to do when she gets out.
I don't know.
Yeah, because how do you, like, go on with your life? Everyone knows who you are at this point.
Yeah, but look at Casey Anthony. She's still alive somehow.
Oh, stupid bitch. I'm surprised no one's fucking killed her yet.
I know. But, yeah, I guess that's all I really have for this case. I mean, it's definitely an intense one. It's just
bad.
The crazy thing about it is there's, like, when you're researching it, like, there's not even much, like, information. It's just all text messages.
Yeah. That's what I noticed, too.
So I feel like if you ever have time to go look through all the texts and do that, and maybe I'd feel different if I looked through all the texts. But when I felt that I saw all the texts, I saw her before that happened. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And yeah. I saw her support.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole thing is fucked up.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, and obviously I don't have time to sit here and, like, read 1,000 texts.
Yeah, me neither.
But, yeah, I think that that's it for today's episode. Do you have anything to add?
I don't.
No. Alrighty. Well, we will definitely be back on Friday.
100%.
We're going to get it together. And we'll be back on Friday with the reunion recap of Teen Mom 2. And then we'll be back next Monday again with another true crime episode. We're doing Emma Walker.
Yes, we are.
Cool. So we're going to do Emma Walker. And then, yeah, after that, I guess we're back with Teen Mom Young and Pregnant.
Which, that's it. Yes, only a few more weeks, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And then I think what we're going to be doing is The Bachelor.
Yes.
And Vanderpump Rules.
Yes.
So stay tuned for that. And I also think that 2 weeks from now is going to be another two-part episode.
Yes.
So those ones are fun. I feel like people like those ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree.
People also seem to really like Pam.
Oh, yeah.
That one did well.
Pam's something. That one's crazy.
I also like the two-part episodes because, like, I just feel like they're so interesting.
Mm-hmm. They're fun.
So, but anyway, we will be back on Friday, and yeah, go follow us on Instagram, Wine Crime TV Time Pod. Join our Facebook group. Give us some comments. Let us know some cases, because we were struggling today to pick a case, actually.
Mm-hmm. Back and forth for a little while.
Yeah. And we landed on this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But anyway, I hope you guys like this episode, and we'll talk to you on Friday. Bye.
Bye.